This episode of Vegans in the Hood is sponsored by Swap Meat Trading Company. Follow on Instagram, Swap Meat Trading Company. Vegans in the Hood Radio. Station 528 VNDH. It's your boy, Vegan in the Hood. Bless up to the fam, Grand Rising and all that. Happy Monday. Yeah. Damn, it's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a strong ep to step two. Step. Well, actually, I did, though. If I recall correctly, The last episode I dropped was unfortunate passing of Prodigy of Mobb Deep. R.I.P. Prodigy, man. That was definitely a sad ordeal. Unfortunate passing of that legend. Hope everybody's doing well. We got y'all, though. You know, we apologize for the inconsistency. You know, with all these new features going on now, we've thought about doing this show a little different now, you know, and we're going to make it a little bit way more impactful and amplify just the content, you know, and just the potency of the conversation. And with that, we've decided to team up. You know, I have a lot of just dope things that's just been going on in business and in my personal life. Shout out to my personal life. Love you. Yeah. You know, and, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you guys about today. You know, I've had my Instagram platform for a while now, you know, for a minute. I didn't really utilize it or work it in a way that I'm kind of utilizing it now. It was just kind of something for my son and me to take pictures and food I was making for him. You know, I was homeschooling my son early, you know, as soon as his mother had him, you know, she might have stayed home for maybe 2 or 3 more months. Maybe a little longer. Maybe she stayed home maybe 4 or 5 months. And then she went back to work and I worked from home. I was still a consultant and I was able to work from home and take care of my son. So a lot of my pictures was really about raising my infant. You know, wasn't really an infant at that time. He was a baby. And then, you know, the maturation of him obviously was him getting older and me homeschooling him and just teaching him, you know, more from the house than thinking about, you know, preschool, teaching my son. So yeah, he was born vegan, and just to move on from that, this brother, you know, he's been around since those days. It was my point. And we follow each other on social media, and I've always admired his work. You know, he's a beekeeper. You know, you don't see too many black beekeepers, you know, in our community, which is commendable. He's a chef. You know, a vegan chef. You don't see, you know, a lot of us that understands the nutrition. He's a black gardener. You know, he grows food. You don't see a lot of that. So all these attributes. My brother, the Greedy Vegan. Shout out to The Greedy Vegan, my dude. Follow The Greedy Vegan on Instagram. The Greedy Vegan, just how it sounds. He'll be here soon, man. So we're going to jump into some conversations. I'm going to do an official introduction to my brother. And, you know, we're about to transition this Vegans in the Hood Radio to a whole nother quadrant. I want y'all to buckle up, man. You know, we going up.
Vegans in the Hood one time. And we're back in this bitch. So, guys, I hope, you know, everybody's having a great Monday. Hope you had a good weekend. I chilled this weekend. Visited some family, hung out with some friends, saw my son. Actually, my son's birthday was on Thursday, so we kind of had, you know, a little field trip, and then we had a party on Friday, and you know that trick on to Saturday. So, yeah, dope weekend. But yeah, man. So we're back, and you know, as I was telling you guys in the last segment, we're gonna be doing this co-host, and I'm really excited to have my brother, the Greedy Vegan, as my right hand, and you know, we're going to hold down this Vegans in the Hood podcast. So, without further ado, I'm going to bring in my guy, the Greedy Vegan. Give me some applause on that.
What's going on? What's going on, everybody, huh? What's going on in podcast world? Jay, what's good, my brother?
What's up, my brother, man? Glad to have you on, man.
Indeed. Yes, indeed.
And, yeah, you know, we've been talking. We've been polying. And, you know, now we're here at the time where we're putting this thing together. So I'm excited and happy that we've things have come full circle.
Yes, yes. For sure, for sure.
So, bro, tell us a little just about your background with, you know, your discovery as far as the world of veganism and, you know, how you, your humble beginnings in it, and then how you kind of just transitioned into, you know, 8 year. How long you been vegan now?
Since 2000. Been vegan since 2000.
Nice. That's 17 years, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, give us a little backdrop on how everything kind of transitioned for you.
Sure. Well, back in my senior year in high school, trying to get cleared for football that year, they wouldn't allow me to play due to being diagnosed with hypertension. So that started, like, you know, that light bulb went off, like, okay, like something's up with my health. And I was also prescribed the same medication my grandmother was taking for a heart attack. Here, wow. I'm 17, 18 years old.
Wow.
Taking the same medication that my grandmother was taking. So that right there was an eye opener.
And, wait, go back. Wait, did you hear what he said? People's fam, did you hear what he said? He said that he was in high school. He was trying to get on the football team. He was basically, you know, shut down from the football team because he didn't clear his physical. His physical didn't clear it. They said, nah, you got hypertension.
Right.
He goes to the doctor and they prescribe him the same medication that his grandmother was on for her heart problems, right?
Yep.
That's deep.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's deep. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So that following year, that same year, you know, I started to cut out the red meat. Well, I was not so much eating pork. I never really ate seafood because I was allergic to it. But cutting out that red meat, and then the rest of that year I just ate chicken. Then the following year, in 97, I just became vegetarian. Me and my brother used to call it starchitarian because, you know, not knowing fully on how to eat properly, we were just eating a lot of starches and wasn't doing
right.
So, you know, from that year on, 97 to 2000, just learning more and more about eating healthier and a plant-based lifestyle, because it's not just a diet, it's a lifestyle.
Absolutely.
through learning and just, you know, eating differently, my body, I noticed, and I tell people this, like, the hardest thing for me to stop eating, it wasn't the meat, it wasn't the chicken, it was that dairy, that macaroni and cheese, that pizza.
Yeah.
I noticed my body slowly started to even reject that. Because even when I would get the pizza and the mac and cheese or the ice cream, not anything to the, I would get this like nauseating feeling. Nuts.
That's what I got. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But it's that sour, once it crosses, is that sour, that whole sour smell, and it just doesn't resonate no more. Right.
Right, right. And that, along with the congestion, I would get the mucus buildup.
The mucus, right.
So that made me transition into just the whole, you know, the vegan, just no dairy at all.
Right.
So from 2000 on, you know, that was really when I started to pay attention more into learning how to cook different things.
Right.
And that's when I first started to learn. I started off first learning how to mimic things that I was used to, whether it be pizza and things like that, and you know, because that's what I was like, all right, let me see if I can, you know, mock this and make this mock dish and so forth and so on.
Right, right.
So that was when I kind of started, and then started, you know, moving away from that and getting more into, you know, cooking more live foods and even some raw dishes and things of that nature.
Right. Fam, I mean, you gotta, you know, you probably, wouldn't understand, you know, the capacity of you know, what I'm about to say, because he's a big guy, you know, so, you know, being that, you know, he's a vegan, you would never, ever, think, you know, he was vegan, just because, you know, he's like I said, he's a big dude.
Right.
You know, I mean, like the story we were saying before, he was, you know, he was trying to get into football, and I doubt he was, you know, going to be, you know, wide receiver.
Nah.
Word up. Word up. But yeah, man. So boom. So you know, 2000, you kind of transitioned into the plant based lifestyle. Did you start growing back then, or when did you actually start growing food?
I first got introduced to gardening as a child, watching my grandmother and my grandfather have a garden in the backyard. So being out there helping with the strawberries, the snap peas, the corn, you know, that's what my first introduction was. But after getting into the plant-based lifestyle, I wanted to connect and reconnect, you know, with my food, as you know, on any small level that I could. So we had that same space, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go for it. And just started off with just tomatoes. And got a few fruit bushes, and that was pretty much it. And that also got some strawberries, and that passion just kept growing from there. And that was, I want to say, that was about 8 years ago when I first got into that. And
Right.
You know, being able to, you know, supply some of my friends and family with local produce.
That's awesome.
And food,
yeah, man.
You know, so it's turned into something that I've got growing passion to have, and I would like to further it by teaching the youth how to grow their own food. Because through growing food, you can now then open up, you know, commerce, because you're going to have product that you can now bring to market and make various products with those ingredients that you grow.
Right.
So that's my next step.
Yeah, man, and I think that's, you know, that's awesome. That's kind of where we definitely see, you know, eye to eye, and our same mission and target is to teach these kids how to grow and be, because, you know, I just think that's something that should be embedded in the fabric of our community. When you go to school, you should be learning how to grow food. I don't understand why that would never be offered, you know what I mean?
I think maybe more now it's offered, but I know it wasn't offered, you know, back when we were in high school, and even when my older son was in high school, it wasn't offered. So, you know, I just think that that's something that we as, I think, visionaries and futurists have to introduce it to the community, and then it kind of work its way in that way. You know, right. One of the things that we're doing right now is the aeroponics. And obviously, you know, the aeroponics is kind of different from what you do, but I think that it's necessary because of the urban living that we have, and just the, you know, the situations, right, and of not being able to have plots or access, right, or accessibility, you know, all those things come into place. So if we can kind of, you know, bring that to market, where we can bring the garden to your house, to your kitchen, and you can grow the food right there in your kitchen, and then put it in your pan from seed to sill. That's part of the, you know, our objective, you know, whatever way we got to do it, and whichever way we got to reposition to get it done, that's the mission, right?
No, definitely. I feel that gardening, and I coined the phrase what I do, urban micro farming. You know, you have urban gardening, mm-hmm, but I'm even smaller than most urban gardens, so I coined the phrase urban micro farming. And when, okay, we have more community farmers, you make your community stronger, because the community is now tied into,
right,
the people that grow their food. We don't have that anymore. Like, you ask the average person, they have no clue where's your oranges coming from? Where your bananas coming from? Where's your lettuce coming from?
Right.
People don't know.
Right.
And that's something you should, right, know and take pride in knowing, that your, right, food is coming from somewhere close to you. I remember this time last year, I wanted to make a pie, and I was looking for some, I needed some tart apples. So I was like, all right, let me get some Granny Smith. They didn't have any. And I'm looking at all the tags on the apples. None of them at that time were from the United States. They were all from other countries. So I asked one of the employees at Whole Foods. I said, excuse me. I said, you don't have any apples from here? He was just like, no.
Right.
I was like, wow, that was crazy. Like, there's no apples, right, available. They were all,
right,
from other countries.
Right.
That's having that.
That's from other countries, not other parts of the country. Other countries.
No, no. Countries, exactly.
Right. Wow. Yeah, man, that's big right there. You know, especially when, you know, you have Washington State and some of the,
right,
you know, they produce some of the largest batches of
largest
apples.
Right.
Yeah, you
but
know,
if
you got all
I was just going to say, if you notice, like, outside of those times when Washington, like, when they're harvested already, you go to the stores and look, like, outside of peak apple season and see where a lot of these apples are coming from. They're not from here.
Right. Wow.
And you can say the same about a lot of our fruits and vegetables. Like, I remember growing up as a child, you got more seasonal things. Like, you couldn't get strawberries and blueberries and melons all year round. That stuff was seasonal.
Right.
Whereas now you can go to you can go get some Driscoll strawberries or raspberries, you know, any time of the year. Whereas, you know, years ago,
right. That's bugged out. Yeah. I mean, that ties us back into, you know, just the GMO, right? And how they're being able to produce fruit all year round is because they have labs, right? And they have basically petri dishes that they're growing food in, or growing your fruit and vegetables in, not yours, but, you know, the people's. And which makes my next statement even more important. It's about how you are a beekeeper. You keep bees. And obviously, you know, the bees pollinate our flowering. They pollinate our plants and flowers, and and vegetables and stuff like that. So how do you see that tying into just you being a gardener and also a beekeeper and, you know, your, you know, just what do you feel is your responsibility to that? Because I have to be honest with you. Like, as a vegan, like, I think until just recently, maybe a month ago, I've been going back and forth with the honey thing, you know.
Right.
You know, and my son, I don't give my son honey as well. His mother does eat honey. But, you know, my thing is, you know, again, I've been kind of on the fence, you know, kind of on the fence about the honey situation. So,
you know,
I would definitely love to hear from, you know, from you.
Well, for me, I initially got into beekeeping to increase my yields on my vegetables, because that's what I, you know, through my reading and studying, it was saying, you know, you can get more yield in your gardens if you have, you know, pollinators around.
Mm.
So, and I would, right. prior to having the bees, I would always see, you know, the bumblebees and my tomato blossoms and my strawberry blossoms. And so I was like, you know, about five years ago, that's when I started. I was, you know, I had got a couple books, you know, was online looking at videos. And one year, you know, I said, I'm going to do it. And I bought all the necessary equipment, got two packages of bees. They ship them to you through the mail. And 3-pound packages, they hold around anywhere from 7,000 to 10,000 bees in each package. And you put them in the in the box. And, you know, you just, it's pretty, after, you know, you install the packages, they do the work. You just got to make sure you give them enough space. So the hive can grow, because if the hive it becomes too populated, that's when they'll create another queen and they'll swarm. Because that, when you see a swarm, that's actually honeybees looking for. Well, they'll you know, post up on whatever type of object when you see them in that cluster, and they'll send scout bees out. The scout bees will go out and find a new home, and once they find a suitable location, they'll come back. Basically, like, whistle to everybody, like, oh, I found a new crib for, let's go. And they'll go and fly to that new dwelling and make a hive.
The bees hierarchy is so ill, yo. Their whole thing is the illest. That shit is
society,
so ill, yo.
Societies have been created off of watching the honeybee and how they work.
Wow.
The architecture, like the way what's that, the ball down in Florida, Epcot Center, the way that shape, the way that structure, it resembles a honeycomb. It resembles a honeycomb.
Mm.
So they looked at
that's it, deep right there.
That hexagonal structure.
And
they got that from, because it's so structurally sound.
That's ill. That's ill, man.
But the thing with eating honey, though, prior to having bees, I might have dabbled in it here and there, but, you know, just looking at all the health benefits of it, you know, and then tasting honey, like, from that's really, really local, it's totally different. And I just, you know, after reading on, you know, how they do what they do, you know, they're using their tongues, they collect the nectar, they bring it back to the hive, they put it in the cells. And then they use their wings and flutter their wings very, you know, very, very fast until they evaporate.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's up to 0.1%, no more than 1% moisture left in the nectar. And that's what becomes honey. So it's the nectar put in the cells. They use their wings to evaporate the moisture out of the nectar. And that's what honey is. So wait.
Them dudes is like, so it's like they extracting. It's like extracting oil from the weed, right? They're basically taking,
right?
And they basically
So when I understood what was going on, I'm like, they just transport the nectar back to the hive, regurgitate it into the cell, fan their wings, evaporate the moisture out of it, and that's honey. That's why honey never goes bad, because there's no moisture in it. It can't mold.
Right.
It can crystallize, but,
right.
you know, you run it under some
right.
warm water, it will go right back to its liquid state. So after I, you know, learned how honey is actually made, I'm like, oh, man, I eat this.
That's deep, yo.
Yeah, that's deep. It made me
so
think,
yeah,
too,
man. I mean,
I was just gonna say real quick. I forget that I'm trying to remember the term. But people will use like the stingers of honeybees, similar to acupuncture, to alleviate ailments and pains and things like that. And it made me think, you know, these bees, they're in all types of flowers, whether it be thyme, rosemary, echinacea, peach blossoms. So
word.
All that,
word.
That they're collecting. And then, you know, if you were to get any of that, you know, and I believe that's why the local honey helps the way it does, because they're taking all these different pollens from these very, you know, the strong medicinal property having plants.
Right.
And, you know, putting
right.
that in that honey. So, I look at
that's
it.
Deep. That's definitely medicine. That's definitely medicine. And like I said, I've been going back and forth just the last month. I was just thinking about the medicinal purpose, you know, the properties of honey. And, you know, because, you know, again, we only know what we know when we know it, and we kind of mature and we grow. So, you know, my thoughts on that was changing. And I'm like, yo, you know, I think I might reconsider honey, you know? I think I might reconsider honey. Yo, I was so bad, I wasn't even eating figs, you know, because you know how figs are kind of, you know, how they're flowered, right? You know, you have the wasp that dies inside the fig.
Right,
and then,
right.
You know, that's how the whole fig situation. So I wasn't even messing with figs just because of that, you know, that fact. But, yeah, man, with the honey, especially that, you know, I know that you're growing it locally and I can really benefit from that. I'm definitely, you know, I'm going to circle back on that and maybe start looking into some infused type things, you know?
Right. Now, I've done that as well. Like, taking honey and, you know, depending on the amount, but taking some raw cannabis and placing that into the honey and letting it sit in the honey for a month or more,
mm-hmm.
so the no properties will be extracted
right.
from the plant, and you know, will just infuse with that honey, and you know, you can take spoons or something like that, just like that.
That's deep. That's so that's like the weed tea right there.
Alleviates pain, like, and the thing I liked about it too, it didn't give you you got the medicinal, because it wasn't heated up, it didn't take on
right.
the properties of being able to, you know, give you that euphoric state. It just, you just get the medicinal
right.
properties
right. right.
that you could
right.
do with child if you needed to, or someone
that's
that
dope.
Just or
you know.
Someone that didn't want the euphoric feeling but did want the medicinal properties of it, that would be right up
right.
their alley.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because I think that's, you know, that's some of the things with the CBD oil is like, you know, you don't want it to be, you know, have the psychotic or psychosis, what do you call it, whatever property that is, that kind of gives you,
right.
makes you high, you know, at that point.
Right.
You know, it's that, without that, it's like just basically the pure medicine that you're,
right.
that the benefit that you're reaping from that.
Most
so,
patients,
yeah, man, that's.
What you want to say?
No, I was listening to you, bro.
Oh, no, I was just saying, as far as what you were, I was going to piggyback off of what you were saying about the CBD, like a lot of patients who
uh-huh.
are looking for that effect, they don't really want any THC at all. They just want the CBD.
Right.
So
exactly.
the pain alleviation without the euphoric feeling. That's all.
Word. So yeah, you know, just to echo that, you know, a couple of years ago, my pops, when he was passing away, we were trying to get him like the CBD oil. And what was crazy is that they misdiagnosed his, you know, they basically said that he was having strokes, and we like, nah, he not having no strokes. We wouldn't know why he would have a stroke. He's been a vegan since, you know, for over 35 years, you know, yada, yada, yada. He doesn't smoke. Yeah, he drinks sometimes, but, you know, it's few and far in between. So, you know, it took them about maybe another year for them to say, all right, let's do a biopsy, you know, and find out what's going on. Once they do the biopsy, then they find out that he had lesions on the brain. But,
wow.
You know, I think that, you know, even with a vegan lifestyle, you know, in the world that we live in, we just so you know, susceptible to the hand of someone else, right? And the only thing, the least thing we can do is kind of control our food supply, right? The least thing we can do is kind of control what we're putting in our mouth, you know, not eat the animals, try to limit farm factoring, you know, just these little things that just make our community and I think our lives better, you know, just little things.
No,
I commend you on just your garden, your green thumb ability, and you know your bee handling, and also your chef work, man. I've been seeing you out there with the chef work. Really putting out those bodies of works out there, word. And, you know, I got a pleasure of having a sandwich last week, but I'm looking forward to, you know, getting some courses from you, man, and hopefully linking up on something like that.
Definitely. That was another thing that got me into, you know, cooking for real, was because you get this stereotype that vegan and vegetarian food is bland, it doesn't taste good, or just healthy food in general doesn't taste good. So I really, you know, eat for myself first and foremost was to, you know, break that stereotype. And then it went like, all right, now I know this stuff
works.
And it just went from there. It's like my homeboy Matt gave me the name The Greedy Vegan, because he's like, yo, bro, you goes in. You ain't typical vegan.
Nah, yeah, like you said, I definitely think that's a stereotype, man. I mean, people, you know, they ask about the stuff that I eat, and, you know, what they really remark about, like you said, how much we eat, and we eat a lot. You know, I tend to tell them, like, yo, you know, most people, they wear their food. I eat my food. I mean, they wear their money. I eat my money. Like, my money goes to food and bills, my dude. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, just my lifestyle.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just my lifestyle alone. It's just, that's what I've averaged in already. You know, some people average in, you know, $1,000 car note, or average in whatever they average in, whatever, however your lifestyle fits, and whatever fits in your lifestyle, you're going to average these things in. So I just think that when it comes to this this vegan world, you know, and just being all over the place, whether, you know, I'm in a couple of different, just different worlds. So just being that I'm around a bunch of different things and a lot of different places, you know, trying to put people on, if you're trying to be vegan, if you are vegan, where's the places that you can hit up? Because when I was becoming vegan, I didn't have nobody telling me, yo, go over here, go over there, go there, do this. This is how you clean a menu, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. So just to kind of put that information out there, I'm looking forward to us being able to put this dope information out there, whether it's the stuff coming from you as a chef, as a beekeeper, as a gardener, you know, as me, as restaurants and, you know, other creative things, music. I think we're definitely we'll be able to connect with the people and give them some dope information from our platform, man.
Yes, sir. Most for sure, for sure.
So, yo, we appreciate, you know, first of all, I want to shout out to all the sponsors, man. Swap Me Trading Company. I want to give a shout out to your peoples over there at Freetown Cafe. I don't know. I know you want to shout out some people.
Shoot out the Presence Atelier over there in Orange, New Jersey. You know what I'm saying? Check out some dope.
Word up. Word up. Word up. Word up. That's what's up.
If anybody's, you know, not doing anything this Thursday night, come check us out at Freetown. Got the Melodious Thursdays going on. Gonna have some good vegan food there at the Vegan Pop-Up.
Melodious Thursdays. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be in a building. Because I had that chickpea salad sandwich last week that was rocking. Shit was super litty.
That's what's up. Good luck.
And the drinks. And the drinks. The drinks was rocking too. It was crazy. So yeah, if y'all in the building, y'all definitely got to come in the building this week Thursday.
Yeah, 41
Freetown.
41
Halsey Street. Word up. Make sure y'all follow The Greedy Vegan on Instagram. The Greedy Vegan. Greedy, you got any other platform you want to put them on real quick?
I'm pretty much just using that one right now.
Okay.
Just using the Instagram right now.
All right, dope. So we're going to wrap it up. We appreciate you guys giving us your ear. So we'll be back bi-weekly. We're putting these shows together for you guys. Follow us at Vegans in the Hood with a Z, Vegans in the Hood, and we'll check you out the next time. Vegans in the Hood, one time. Do not attempt to adjust your color.